Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So
Faster Fringo!
Don't you like it?
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for August 15th, 2024. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network feed or on the Open the Voice Gate feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on Twitter X at Open the Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red boxes to sponsor this podcast, and you can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears. Joined alongside, as always, your other host, Case Lowe. And Case, I now have basically an 11-month warning that the wrestling world is descending upon me.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Big announcement today. We're all coming to your neck of the woods next year.
I mean, Spears territory is going to be the home of the wrestling world. It's finally happening. It's coming home. I think, like, the big thing for me is, do I do the Mike Spears Texas Magical Realism tour bus or not?
Tour bus?
Okay, you have not watched the episode of Seinfeld. Never mind.
Oh, I have. That one went over my head. That was a good pull, though. I apologize. I blew your high spot immediately.
But yeah, no, it's wild for me. Like, I immediately, of course, tell my fiance, and she has like three wrestlers she cares about from Chicago. And it is, okay, Bryan Danielson, what's up with Bryan Danielson? I go, baby, we got to talk about that on the side.
TBD.
She sees Orange Cassidy and she goes, hell yeah. And then her number three like wrestler she cares about is Athena, right in front and center, because she saw Athena on the plane to All Out last year.
Nice.
And that's what normies kind of latch on to.
Nice. I like that. This is a chance for you to once again stake your claim to a certain territory. You haven't been able to do this since Naruki Doi versus Sammy Callahan from Open the Southern Gate in 2011 when we reviewed it in 2020. That was more the Carolina territory. You have a real chance here to make your mark on the Texas territory now, so congratulations on that.
Yeah, like for me, I'm also, it's going to be interesting because I can only react to like how like people we talk to and stuff like that. It feels like there's like energy behind this in a way that AEW show announcements haven't had for 2 years. And I don't know. I'm kind of looking forward to it. It's going to be like right after my birthday, too. So, you know, just roll it all in together and then get folks down here and get good barbecue, you know?
Yeah, people seem into the stadium show gimmick, which I don't know. It's not necessarily something that I am like, oh, God, yeah, like that's awesome. You know, on a sentimental level, if AEW ever ran where the White Sox play, or I guess even where the Cubs play at Wrigley, I'd be like, oh, this is super cool. But I don't have the desire to go to a football field to watch wrestling. I'm debating on whether or not I want to go to Hoffman Estates. And that is kind of all dependent on the result of MJF and Will Ospreay at All In, because that determines who Pac wrestles at All Out. And I got news for you. One of those opponents sounds really appealing to watch in person, and the other one doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, you're having that kind of dangled. Like, that's a real risk and reward situation there.
Well, it's it's the try hard MJF stuff, which I don't know. He kind of falls under the Flip Gordon category of CMLL, where...
Okay, I like this comp. All right, I see where you're going with this.
Well, yeah. It's just, like, I've always said with Flip, because, like, I think we talked about this on the show recently, but, like, Griffin Peltier at Voice of Wrestling is a great wrestling mind, watches a ton of stuff. I really value his opinion.
And preservationist.
Preservationist, absolutely. And he's really into Flip and CMLL, and I always, like, have to explain when I talk about it, I don't have a personal vendetta against Flip. He's a dumb guy, but that's not a crime. He's not a bad wrestler. I just have zero interest watching him in this promotion that is super specific, that I enjoy in a super specific way. He does not fit the vision of what I want. Pac fits the vision of what I want. MJF, Flip Gordon category. I think it's lowbrow nonsense. I think he's completely shedding the... he's a wrestling genius, a genius wrestling mind skin that he has. And I find the American stuff to be the worst parts of AAA, so I really don't want it in CMLL.
It's also, like, for me, uniquely enough, we will talk about this match in a bit. We have some programming we want to get through before we talk about Dangerous Gate. Very similarly to me, like, I recognize Kurashiro, Tokyo, Japan is not a bad wrestler. I just don't want to see him in my Dragon Gate. You know,
that's like, very good comp. Yes,
and it's like incredibly over. Like, you could see visibly the Dragon Gate crowd gets Kurashiro, Tokyo, Japan in a way that really frustrates me, because I'm like, it makes sense why you did this, Ryo Saito. That's right, but it's just like, it's just antithetical for what I view and what I want in my Dragon Gate pro wrestling.
Yeah, very much so. I completely get that comp.
But we will talk more about that Twin Gate match in a bit. But Case, we're in August. This is like one of the more intriguing times in pro wrestling, and especially for us. Yes, Open the Voice Gate. We are a Dragon System podcast, but we do like, and we kind of have put our flag in as a podcast that takes a look critically at the wrestling scene in Japan. And we're in the middle of the G1 victory, or the G1 climax, the round of six was today, the play-in matches, and the N1 victory right now. Dragon Gate in the midst of their big fall as well. I feel like that this is a good time, as like we talk off air about Case, that takes stock of the state of pro wrestling in Japan before we get into Dangerous Gate.
I think on the whole, the people that we exist with, you know, the bubble that we're in, are maybe a little bit more bullish on Japanese wrestling and the future of Japanese wrestling than they were, say, 2 months ago or 3 months ago. I really like Pro Wrestling Noah right now, and I wish that they were having success at the box office. The New Japan G1, sometimes I feel like I'm watching a different promotion than everybody else, especially with some of the younger New Japan guys that people seem to be very into. And that's not to say that the G1 didn't have great matches. The ceiling of the G1... Kiyomiya and Oiwa not included, you know, the ceiling of the G1 is much higher than the ceiling of the N1, but a few days through the N1 compared to the end of the G1, I am enjoying what Noah has put out far more than I am New Japan.
Yeah, it was very interesting for me. Like, with our schedule change this week, it let me get completely caught up on both the G1 and the N1. Which, at least, like, I wanted to see all of Luis Monte's matches, of course, but I ended up watching this because, like, weirdly enough, Pro Wrestling Noah right now has a really intriguing tournament.
Yeah.
And that's just not what the G1 climax was. The G1 climax this year, there was a lot of, at least with the way that I look at it, Case, there were a lot of, like, pleasant shows where I watched this and I was like, you know what? That was a satisfying 2.5 hours of wrestling, but it was not, and I know Joe very much is in a similar mind to this, was not the motherfucking G1 climax. Like, that was the issue. Whereas you look at the N1 victory as of where they're at, like, the other nice thing about the N1 victory case is they basically do 3 shows a week and then they're off until the weekend. So you're able to catch up pretty quickly. There's a lot of interesting names that have happened in Pro Wrestling Noah for like the first time in ever. And I feel like the big, like, highlight name, and you mentioned the match already, I am a full belief that Ryohei Oiwa is the one that New Japan needs to go full force on now. And I say this as someone who at one time was a big Yota Tsuji believer. It's Oiwa, and it's not even close.
I thought Oiwa was really underrated in the Voices of Wrestling 30 Under 30. I had him around the 20-ish mark, but he wasn't a guy that I don't know.
Did not make my list, I believe.
Yeah, I don't know. Let me look right now. I don't know if he finished in the final 30. The first thing that pops up is the Reddit link, so let me take a look at this.
He did not make my 30, and I'm looking at, because you know my tier system, mm-hmm. he was in my 45 and up. So he was one of my, he didn't make my short list.
Okay, so he made 28 overall. So it was Jamie Hayter 25, Bandido 26, Miyu Watanabe 27, Oiwa 28, and then Mao and Mariah May rounding out that list. So that's sort of the ballpark that he was in. And, you know, he finished a little worse in the overall list than where I had him. But yeah, he's the New Japan guy that has connected with me. Yota Tsuji is an interesting one because I guess he did a really good work today. You know, we're recording this. I have not seen any of the playoff stuff, so I haven't seen the Takeshita match. But
I haven't seen the playoffs either.
Yeah.
That's for this weekend. I'll do a notebook show for that. Yeah.
But I think what we're realizing with him is that he's very high ceiling and very low floor. I think he's dangerously inconsistent, which is a bit of a bummer. That's not really what I want from that kind of wrestler, but that's the kind of guy that I think he is showing himself to be, which is fine because that means three or four times a year on a good year, we're going to get Tsuji matches where everybody stops what they're doing and goes, holy shit, look at this guy wrestle. He's incredible. But Oiwa's the one where on a show in, show out basis, and he's been doing this the entire time he's been at Noah, he's been phenomenal. And it's very funny to me that the biggest young guy standout that Noah's had since Kiyomiya, and Kiyo was the biggest standout they have had since, I don't know, Sagira, is the product of the New Japan system. It is a New Japan wrestler who will eventually leave them in New Japan, whose star-making system is so beyond broken. And that's really what jumped out to me during this G1. They are going to likely be rewarded simply by sending a guy to Noah and breaking the pattern of lifeless, meaningless excursions that they've been sending guys on for the better half of a decade now. So it's like both Noah and New Japan stumbled into something here that is completely opposite of what they normally do.
And with him, I feel like it's worth noting that Oiwa is only 25, which when you compare that to Yota Tsuji, who is one of the older people of his generation, that's a guy who went through college before he went into pro wrestling. And that changes the clock a little bit. And the fact that the pushed young guy and the N1 victory, if you're looking at someone who is a Noah homegrown, is Yoshiki Inamura. And Yoshiki Inamura is 31, and he's only now kind of getting pushed right now. Oiwa is 25, and yeah. I'm convinced, like, after this, you do your Kiyomiya match, you go get him out of the native populations like mine for a month or two, give him a new haircut, and he becomes like your breakout star of 2025.
But isn't this the problem with the New Japan system? And it's why I was so harsh on them a year ago when they did the press conference and they were like, we're going to speed up our training methods. Here is the Reiwa generation of guys. And I will always be a little defensive over this. By no means did I claim that Drangate invented the Three Musketeers, but when New Japan rolled out the Reiwa Musketeers about a week after Drangate rolled out the Reiwa 6, it was like, all right, so their training methods are all but saying we need to be on the level that Drangate's on. Their storytelling is a direct rip of something that Drangate is doing. I understand the Musketeer ideology belongs to New Japan. That's not what I'm saying. I'm more focused on the loud and proud generational shift that is happening in front of our eyes. And it's very clear that New Japan needs young blood. And my big takeaway from this G1 is like, they're not ready. And also, I don't care about any of these guys because they go away for a little bit and then they come back with what feels like, you know, a largely overproduced gimmick. Kevin Kelly at this point in his life is right about very few things, but I do think Kevin Kelly is right in his complaining about these gimmicks that are you know, they're not rainmakers. They're not King of Strong style gimmicks. These are mid-card gimmicks that are being given to guys with main event aspirations. And there is a complete disconnect there. And I don't think a lot of these guys are ready from an in-ring perspective and from a charisma perspective. You know, I want to talk about Yuya Uemura. In particular, some of these guys are just not ready to be at that level, and they're not anywhere close.
Yeah, so a couple things I kind of want to note here. No one has ever said, without going, and making a pervy joke, what Gene Blass is supposed to be. Like, just straight up. Like, I kind of figure from, like, the kaiju roar that he's supposed to be, like, this, like, nuclear aged like monster kind of thing, like that is like the presentation, but that's, as you're saying, and a broken clock is right twice a day. Kevin Kelly is right, like that's like radioactive monster is not what your main eventer should be. Being obsessed about pudding at a press conference is not what your main eventer should be, and especially in a company where your one real bankable star, everyone is going around and going like, ugh, that was a rough tournament for them. You can't have like these like silly characters. And then you bring up Uemura. Uemura just looks scared. He looks so uncertain of himself.
You know who he reminds me of? He reminds me of Wrestle One era Sonata.
Yeah.
He looks like him. He wrestles like him and he feels like him. That guy is not a star, and I am so surprised at people who I'm normally pretty on the same page with when it comes to young talent or New Japan talent, how we feel about people that are really into that guy. I am not at all, and I did not think he had an interesting tournament whatsoever. My G1 viewing was anything that got a bunch of hype or anything that looked really interesting to me. I've never been somebody, I can't watch every G1 match. I've never been that kind of guy, but you know, this year I was very selective in my viewing, but his name kept on coming up, and I was thoroughly, thoroughly unimpressed.
And like his gimmick and his wrestling style is supposed to harken back to the past. And with that, how are you really like defining this? Like we saw when Ren Narita came back and he was Son of Strong Style, how much of a DOA gimmick that is.
Yeah.
Like this is not. And it's one of those things that, similarly with like Dragon Gate, this is not the audience that cares about that kind of things. Whereas Dragon Gate has so much fan turnover that there's at times, I wonder if the fans really know, like, oh, this is the reference they're making with Genki Horiguchi having like a fake sword so he can pull out the rubber band. You know, like the fan turnover makes it to such an extent that it's like, we are so far away from like the generation that they're harkening back to for someone who is so young, like Yuya Uemura. It's like, why are you cosplaying being a grandpa in a way?
Here's an interesting analogy for you. And if I'm off base, if this is too harsh, you can backpedal for me here, because I'm more than happy to hear a differing opinion. It actually ties into the podcast we're going to do next week, where we bring back the Rewind and Rewatch series with Umino and Yuya and Narita, and I would even say to some degree like Great O'Khan, doesn't it feel like they're doing New Japan cosplay? That they're all, in the same way that there is Mini Shima and Mini Fuji and Suicito, these guys are grown-up versions of lesser Tanahashis and lesser Sonatas. And, you know, O'Khan, obviously, you know, that one is more direct, but it doesn't feel authentic. You know, it doesn't feel like Strong Machine J taking the Strong Machine lineage to a new and modern perspective. Great O'Khan feels like he's doing cosplay Killer Khan. This is a promotion. New Japan right now, the young guys, and I think this is why we all like Oiwa so much, is New Japan is a cosplay promotion right now.
You bring this up, and the perfect example is Masakita Miya. Like, you have, like, so many of these like characters and wrestlers that they are just being derivatives essentially of past gimmicks, and in such ways that it really, like, I wouldn't push back as much. I would say that I wonder, like, it's an attempt for an audience that we saw Pro Wrestling Noah try to do this with Keiji Muto in his retirement tour, that they don't stick around for it. Like,
no,
you could pander,
no, of course not.
You could pander and get the salarymen back for Keiji Muto and Kaz Fujita, but they will leave as soon as the star is gone. And as we've seen from, like, Great O'Conn, like, has the character, has, like, certain amount of charisma, has a certain amount of draw. Like, that's why they were trying to do all the hometown stuff, trying to make him into this outpost guy. But you, in doing like this in such a heightened gimmick, it kind of diminishes it. Whereas if you do like the hometown guy and be like, oh, great, we're going back to, I don't know, Hamamatsu, because that's where they were today, and we're in Chiba, we're going to make sure that the Chiba guy is out in front. That's how you actually develop that. Like, why are they focusing on the past with characters that feel old, like in a way that you're harkening back to an era from like the 80s, that's 40 years ago, instead focusing on engendering the support of the stars as themselves out in the outposts.
And I think for me, it ultimately comes down to, I am burnt out on the, we're not supposed to care about these guys while they wrestle in black tights for 2 years. Then they're supposed to go away, by and large, not do anything of note. And then they're supposed to come back and we're supposed to care about them. And I think I've just been through enough of these in the Bushiroad era to where I don't care about them. That is a very stale way of making stars. And you see it with the way that, you know, Oiwa is growing as not only just a strictly in-ring wrestler, but as a performer. You know, he's going to come back and be better than all of his contemporaries. And, I think it's something that, you know, All Japan has succeeded in. I am historically not the biggest All Japan fan of this era. I like it. I don't love it the way other people's do. But my God, I mean, they are developing young talent. Dragon Gate is developing young talent. Noah, they don't have any young talent. But New Japan is the one where they have bodies on the boat. I just don't trust that they're going to get to their destination. I think that young crop of guys, I was really, really disappointed within the G1. I mean, Umino, I am totally out on. Narita, I am totally out on. Uemura, I was so thoroughly unimpressed by. And Tsuji was great when Tsuji was great, but, you know, I also saw him have some clunkers. Now, the Gaijin they've got, you know, Callum Newman is going to get better. We all need to pump the brakes on him. He's young. He's trying a lot of things. He will figure it out. I think he's going to end up being very, very good. And we've seen now the best version of Gabe Kidd. It was him in that Shingo match, and that was utterly phenomenal. And if Gabe Kidd could do that a few times a year, New Japan would be in much better shape.
Yeah, and I think it all goes back to the point of, do you really need to hammer home the idea of your bootstraps? You are starting from below, or you could go look at All Japan and Yuma Anzai, already like the biggest star in the company, or the Saitos, who they did a very short excursion and they immediately started getting them into being the biggest stars up in Northeast Japan.
Yeah.
Like, it's not that hard, but I feel like even with the Saitos, where I think that we could both admit is a nostalgic gimmick at its core, they're still playing on the fact that these are two very charismatic guys, and that they're able to, at least with like you have a good looking one, you have like the monster one, and like that's marketable. And then you have someone like Naruki Doi, who you add to it. Naruki Doi is a genius. So they found out a way to take a gimmick that was very reminiscent of the past and modernize it and find the guys that work in the gimmick. And it's not just becomes them stuck in the trappings, whereas like Uemura feels like he is just so stuck in being a Showa era wrestler, whereas you watch, and I was not a big Saito Twins defender. I was pretty anti Saito Twins for a long time, but you watch them now, and whatever misgivings you might have as them as like pro wrestlers, that's all completely gone, because they are the most over things in wrestling.
And they figured out something that works for them. And
exactly.
I guess this is my larger New Japan complaint, because I don't feel this in Noah, and I don't feel this in All Japan, and I don't feel this in Dragon Gate, is New Japan is so complacent right now. They produce every guy the same way. They all develop the same general style. Now, that's a larger wrestling issue that I was so entertained by Dangerous Gate in part because there were two matches on this show that felt really unique compared to what the rest of the wrestling world is doing right now. But all the New Japan guys have a certain look. They wrestle a certain way. They are developed in the same way. And it's boring. You know, if New Japan, again, last year, they were very publicly facing about, hey, we're not developing stars correctly, and our bullet points are just going to happen to be, you know, the same things that Dragon Gate does. They should go ahead and do that. You know, if they're going to talk about it, they need to act on it. Because right now, I look at a promotion where Hirooki Goto and Shingo were the stars of the G1, and Konosuke Takeshita was great, and he's not sticking around. And then you've got your young guys, and I didn't think they were any good. And, you know, I've never been that big of a fan of Naito as a wrestler. I've always thought he could be carried to great matches, but now he doesn't have those guys to carry him. So it's a wash completely. That's not to say it was a bad G1. Better than last year is better than 2 years ago. But I think the N1 is really interesting. I think when King of Gate is announced, which I was expecting it to be announced at Dangerous Gate, you know, TBD on the King of Gate thing this year, I think when that gets announced, those blocks are going to be so interesting. And I don't think New Japan has any sort of youthful juice right now. And that was really, really apparent in the G1.
Yeah. What my big takeaway from the G1 is, hey, you still have an opportunity to use Shingo as a bridge here. So why don't you have Shingo win the G1, win at the Dome? You've had him in the Dome before. So like, just do it proper. And then just have him having matches against all the young guys you're trying to get over. And then Oiwa comes in, knocks off Shingo's head, and you're off to the races, and you have a bunch of fresh challengers for Oiwa as champion. Like, that's when that's my takeaway, instead of, man, you got Yota Tsuji, he's having a hell of a year, or it's just going like, all right, way more, I finally figured out what you are trying to be as a wrestler. When my takeaway is, let's go back to the Dragon System guy, to me, that tells me that the tournament is a failure.
The one thing that I'm worried about with Oiwa is he is really small.
He's 5'10". Like, he might be actually 5'10".
He really? Luis Monte towered over him in their match together.
Monte's always, like, the tallest guy in all of his matches, though.
I know, but Monte, if Monte was going to go to New Japan, he wouldn't tower over people. I understand in Dragon Gate, he's obviously huge, but he towered over Oiwa to a point that I thought, are we underrating how tall Luis Monte is?
I think that that's possible. So Oiwa is listed at 1.80 meters. So he's listed at technically 5'11", just for, let's pick someone, let's go Kaito Kiyomiya. Let's see how tall Kaito Kiyomiya is. Kaito Kiyomiya is also listed as 180 centimeters.
Interesting. Okay.
So I just think also, like my other crazy takeaway about this, everyone makes fun of Dragon Gate for like the short kings, you know, going for like that kind of thing. Noah just has fire hydrants.
Yeah, Noah is building a roster. You referenced him earlier. Noah's building a roster of Masa Kitamiyas. They all have that, just like you said, that fire hydrant look now.
They all look like that they would be fullbacks for Eric Dickerson at SMU.
Yeah.
Which for like someone like Yoshiki and Amora, that's a great look for that guy. However, you know, like, he came back and was like, all right, he's doing his gimmick from Excursion for a match, and he's going to be Yoshiki and Amora. He's going back to the real name. We're going to see him as a full push. The fact that the guy is in Centurion costume armor that like is cut to like rip off, and he has to do this every single night, it instantly tanks him as a star in my mind. It's the Adam Cole theory. You can't cosplay in fake armor. You can't do it as a wrestler.
Yeah, no, that's hard to argue. Two and one points I have, and then we can go on to Dangerous Gate. One, I just want to talk about Monte real quick.
Looking great.
I think he's been fantastic. I love the Kiyomiya match. I thought the Oiwa match was very good. The Dragon Bane match was the Dragon Bane match. But
Dragon Bane almost dying in that match.
Dragon Bane almost dying. Dragon Bane almost paralyzing Luis Monte. And then the underrated part of that, Dragon Bane, as he's falling down the stairs, almost killing a Noah cameraman in his tumble. It is really one of the more catastrophic bumps I have ever seen.
It was one that I think immediately after I saw that, I sent you a message going, holy shit, what the fuck was that?
I know. It was bad. But man, otherwise, I think Monte's had such an excellent tournament. It's been really enjoyable to see him thrive in that environment.
Yeah, and it's been interesting, at least. I don't know if it's like an issue or a thing, but like his weird like threadbare shirts that he's wearing and Noah that he's never worn in Dragon Gate are just throwing me off a little bit.
It's not a great look, and it's a bummer because I think Big Hug as the whole,
he looks perfectly fine without the t-shirt to begin with. Like, I know. That was always the thing that kind of surprised me about the face turn, is that he didn't pop the top off.
I know. And Big Hug, you know, as a group, I think they finally look right. They all have good gear. And then Monte is kind of going back to that November, December, January, like right when he turned face look. And I don't understand why. That's a good point, because it's not a very good look.
And he, more often than not, loses the shirt throughout the match, because it's like it's basically the puffy shirt if you could see through it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he like loses it, and just like, man, it's... And it's definitely a me thing. Like, most people aren't watching Luis Monte matches and going like, what? Why is he wearing this here? That's not what he usually wears. But it was something that stuck out to me.
Other note I have before we talk about Dangerous Gate, we just talked about Dragon Bane. I want to talk about his partner. Alpha Wolf might finish on my SFM 50 list this year.
He's been really fun.
He's really good. Like, I went notebook on him and Inamora on that first Korakuen show they ran, and every match he's had has been flirting in that, like, oh man, that's almost a 4-star match. Like, that was really, really good. It actually reminds me a little bit right now. He obviously doesn't have the size, so he doesn't have the basing ability, even though he's a solid base, but he is kind of reminding me of post-COVID 2020 and 2021 Diamante, where this was a guy that I really didn't think much of for the first few years he was in my life. And he's found a style and has found opponents that really work for him. And he's becoming a really exciting show in, show out wrestler.
Yeah, it's really kind of, I was surprised that the Golpadores were going to land there. And it has worked out. A lot better than I think people were expecting for them, given their reputation beforehand. And Alpha Wolf, more so than I think Dragonbane, really has kind of broken out. And I think that they're like so distinctive too, like in their style. And I think that they're still like pretty young too. So more and more, I think it's gonna work out for them, I feel like.
Yeah, very much so. No, I don't think much of Dragon Bane, but Alpha Wolf I'm really into right now.
Yeah, but the N1, like, it's been a fun tournament, even though, like, everyone else in the tournament is getting, like, massively hurt.
That's true. It is a bit of a tournament of doom, but I've enjoyed it while it's lasted.
Yeah, Monte, this is, like, the longest you've gone in a pro wrestling Noah ring without getting hurt somehow. Keep it up, man. Like, best of luck.
Well, if people keep on getting hurt, you know, he's got 3 wins already. They're in dangerous territory of Monte somehow winding up in the finals by default.
Yeah, this is kind of feeling like how Ricochet ended up winning Best of the Super Juniors 2014.
Yeah. Where it was just, you know, survival of the fittest at that point. No, I mean, I would assume Monte is going
to
lose the rest of his matches. Which is a bummer, because that means he'll lose to Josh Briggs. And I'm really curious to see how bad that match will be. But
Briggs has been awful.
He's a horrible wrestler. I never enjoyed him.
Yeah, he was awful in Evolve and never thought much of him other than like, oh yeah, Gabe's going to get this guy to NXT. Well, that worked out for Josh Briggs and Harlem Bravado and like no one else. But it's just like he's like regressed into even a shittier of a wrestler. When you have like Tavion Heights, who has been very good in this tournament on the other side, it's wild how bad, like Josh Briggs just breaking people's clavicles and everyone's just going, oh, it's okay.
You know, the other, Tavion's getting the buzz and rightfully so, because, you know, he's got the NXT connection. But man, you know, credit to Titus Alexander. That guy has stuck around in Noah. He's better every time I see him, and I have really, really enjoyed his tournament, and I'm shocked in the Voices of Wrestling Discord how many people haven't. I think he has been great.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And his match against Kano, who, I mean, that's been the fun thing about this tournament is like they kept Kiyomiya and Kano apart. So you're getting to see just like the difference there. And Kano has just been getting like him versus Titus Alexander. Then I actually really liked him versus Tavion Heights, too. It's been like, oh, Kano has been he might be the MVP of the N1 victory at this point.
Which is nice because he's had a pretty quiet year. Like, for as much as I've enjoyed Noah, and I will continue to say I've enjoyed Noah in 2024, the entire promotion as a whole, more than I've enjoyed Noah since like maybe 2016. I think it's been a very fun year, but Kano hasn't been super involved. He had the Kiyomiya match at the start of the year, but unless I'm just completely drawing a blank on something, it's not like he's had a ton of big matches. So it's been nice to see that as well because he's been very, very good.
Absolutely. So should we talk some Dangerous Gate 2024?
We should, because I also have a ton of thoughts on this show. I will say off the bat, I have not talked to you about it, but I really, really enjoyed this show. I enjoyed the show for what it was, you know, on the surface, just like, oh, yes, it had good matches. It had a good angle, this, that, and the other thing. But the further and further removed we are from this show, I keep on remembering like, oh, I like that they did this, and oh, they might have set this up, and oh, I wonder what they're going to do with this. And I normally have those thoughts coming out of a Corkin, but to have it coming out of a big show where your last two matches were as great as they were, I am thumbs all the way up on Dangerous Gate. And before I throw it to you, I'll just note, for whatever reason on Sunday, I was kind of walking around going like, man, I don't know if this show is going to be any good. I just have a bad feeling. You know, the Brave Gate match will flop, and you know the Twin Gate match is what it is, and maybe Kakuta's just not meant to be in this spot. You know, maybe that'll bomb. And then I turned the show on Monday and just had a total blast watching it.
Yeah, this was just a very, very fun large Dragon Gate show. I don't necessarily think maybe I walked away from this show. I would say a little bit more down on the main event, but still notebook range on it. But when you looked at the show and when we previewed and talked about it, we kind of remarked like, wow, there's a lot of meat to this show. And more often than not, that means that things will disappoint. And I would have to say that even like the three undercard matches, you got the best versions of all three of them. And as much as I personally have a distaste for Kirishio Tokyo Japan in my Dragon Gate, that was not a bad match. And Junta Miyawaki had the match of his life. And all those add up to like a big thumbs up for him.
I agree. I thought it was very fun. Very fun start to finish. Let's obviously talk about the Dream Gate match here. I wrote a ton of words on this for voicesofwrestling.com because I thought it was a pretty special Dream Gate match by the time it was over, but I don't know your thoughts on it. So please, Mike, you have the floor.
So I thoroughly enjoyed it. I will preface this saying I like the Triangle Gate match more than the Dream Gate match. They are both equally 4.25 for me. But if push is going to come to shove, I walked away finally feeling confident about the Strong Machine J era of Natural Vibes. And that was an open question that I've had basically since Dead or Alive. So that kind of goes forward that for me. I thought that seeing this version of Yamato, where you do have like flashes of Mad Blanky era, flashes of Big Company Ace era, and then Cranky Old Man Yamato coming together to create. We didn't necessarily see that as much at Kobe World, but in this match, he basically was just very mean to Madoka Kakuta's arm throughout the entire match and built that up into a way taking out his big weapon. And then to a point where I feel like the finish felt super earned, where he was trying to put the much larger wrestler out throughout the entire match. And it takes him going for the sleeper hold of the Almighty and then two Galareas, the first one getting a kick out to put away Madoka Kakuta. And I think that with the exception of the title change and the Susumu match he had in his Ace run, I like this Yamato match more than anything in that one title run, I feel like.
I'm over the moon about this match. You know, I went 4.5 stars on it, and it comes down to the idea that it, oddly enough, was sort of the leadoff topic on the flagship this past week of, you know, what happened to the idea of being able to tell stories within the confines of a wrestling match? Why does everything have to be so dramatic and produced and, you know, like a bad B movie to tell a story? Why can't it just be the wrestling itself? And I don't know if you came away from it with the same take that I did, but to me, we're in the midst of what is becoming, what is, you know, unfolding in front of us as this really, really great long-term story they've told with Yamato, where I think he purposefully took a year off from being in the main event scene, and they've purposefully brought him back. I think this was the plan all along, is to have what, again, it's, you know, what I said last week, I think this will be the career-defining run of Yamato's career by the time it's all said and done. And that doesn't mean that it's going to be a year-long Dreamgate run. It doesn't mean it's going to be longer than the reign he had in 2016 and 2017. It doesn't mean he's going to rival Shima's reign. But I think from a quality output, they are in the sweet spot with Yamato right now, where he can still be this proud babyface Mr. Dreamgate guy, but in these title defenses, he can wrestle with an edge and he can wrestle like the most interesting version of Yamato. And the story of this match was Madoka Kakuta is younger and inexperienced, and he threw every single thing he had at Yamato. And it was, you know, put there with an exclamation mark at the very end of the match where he throws that lariat. And as soon as he connects with Yamato, he collapses. He can't follow through. It hurt Kakuta more than it hurt Yamato. And then Yamato pins him with two Galleas, notably not the Ragnarok. Like, Yamato had something left in the tank. This was the Miami Heat in 2012 beating the Oklahoma City Thunder in the finals. And hopefully Kakuta, you know, unlike the Thunder, is able to get back to the mountaintop and can have a fruitful main event career. But Yamato's in the zone right now. And he was tougher and he was smarter and he was wiser than Kakuta was. And even if the match maybe didn't start off as the most exciting thing, by the end of it, these guys are hitting each other, you know, like they're Big Japan strong division guys, like they're peak never open weight title match guys. And sure, they're also doing the Dragon Gate story as this match goes along. I thought it was a brilliant match for the time it was all done.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I think we're going to see this Yamato run be the solidifying opportunity for a lot of guys, because maybe Benkei did not need that kind of, all right, we are presenting you and you are like overcoming this, because he's had the whole odyssey of the last 5 years. And that was him getting back the title was him kind of being ready for leading the next generation. Kakuta, I think we have that title run last year and we walked away from it. I think we have to admit that as satisfying as Dead or Alive 2023 was and finishing the story, like doing the in-ring storytelling and it paying off, like at the end of the run when Luis Monte won it at Final Gate, we kind of were like, well, it, you know, had its ups and downs, but we think he's going to be okay with this. I think we walk away from this Yamato challenge and Kakuta, maybe not as much as 5-5-2023, but he comes out of this feeling as strong as he did coming out of Final Gate 2022 with the match against Shingo Takagi. Like, this is a title run that, yes, it's going to check a lot of boxes. Maybe he gets the cumulative defense record. Maybe he gets a cumulative days record. We don't think this is going to be 13 defenses in it and 2 years like Shima in 2011 through 2013. But I think you look at this and everyone who is going to have title matches with Yamato is going to come away from said title match in a much better position than they were going into it. And unless you have anything else add on to the main event, I think that another example of that is going to be Ishin attacking Yamato after the closing mic segment as Dragon Storm was playing in and they were wrapping up. And now Ishin is the number one contender for the September Korakuen.
Well, I think I can combine my points here, because however long this Yamato reign goes, and I think he not only has, you know, he's done Ben and he's done Kakuta, so he'll get Minoru at some point. He'll probably get Shun at some point. He'll probably get Strong Machine J at some point. And if Yoshioka is ever healthy, you know, God willing, then, you know, they'll probably do a Yoshioka match as well. But this is not the Yamato run that is going to be handicapped by only one story. They're now mixing in this Ishin thing. And if Ishin gets a title shot, that means that in the right scenario, Jason Lee can get a title shot. And that means that Mochizuki Jr., which my prediction at some point this year is Yamato versus Jr. in Korakuen Hall. All right, now Jr.'s in the fold as well. Let alone, you can always do a Doi match. You can always do a Mochi match. You can always go back to one of the old guys. There's just so much for Yamato to work with here. And I think where Yamato's at right now, and this might sound blasphemous to some because I'm going to compare it to one of the finest angles and one of the finest rivalries in wrestling history, and I don't by any means think Yamato's run is at this level, but it reminds me a lot of Tanahashi and Okada at Wrestle Kingdom 9, where it was, you know, Tanahashi coming in as the champion, Okada coming in as the challenger. Everybody and their mother was like, all right, this is where Okada beats Tanahashi and becomes the guy. And then Tanahashi beat him and laughed at him as he was crying and you know, leaving the ring. And I think they're telling a very similar story here where, and I think it's calculated. I by no means have the impression that I think some people do that maybe this is like a reverse course and a pivot away from the young guys. This is going to end with, if not Coach Minoru beating him, then Shun Skywalker beating him or Yuki Yoshioka beating him. And if it's not one of those guys, it's probably going to be somebody younger. I think this is Yamato sort of wagging his finger like Mutombo and going like, oh, you guys thought I was done. I'm now going to have this fuck you world title reign where I show people that I'm not done. And that's the important part that sort of bridges the gap between what we saw with Kakuta and what's to come is you're exactly right. This is the title reign that is going to elevate people if they choose to be elevated, because this is not 2016, 2017 Yamato where he was asleep at the wheel and on cruise control the entire time. He's going to show up for these big matches. He looks motivated. He wrestles motivated. He's good to go. It's going to be the other young guys that are going to be in a sink or swim scenario. And if they show up, they are going to be better off. Kakuta better off because of the performance he had in this match than he was coming into it. Ishin is the big test. I'm over the moon about this, Mike. What do we say the week after Kobe World? The one thing that we want to see in this Yamato run is a title match at Korakuen Hall. We're getting it. We're getting it against Ishin. I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled. What a great angle to close the show and a very, very exciting Korakuen match.
Yeah, no. I'll touch on my Ishin thoughts in a second. Something that you said that I think kind of needs to be underlined. If Dragon Gate was going backwards, they would not have had Madoka Kakuta in that title match. If Dragon Gate was looking to as like, okay, we need to get away from the young guys, they're not ready, they wouldn't be doing Ishin's first title defense right now. Essentially, it will be Ishin's 3-year anniversary getting a title match. Like, they would not be doing that. They would be doing the Naruki Dois, the Masaki Mochizukis that you brought up. Those would be the title matches if they were abandoning ship. They're not doing that. Ishin, it was one of those things where we thought big things were happening for Kai and Ishin. We should have just gone like, oh, it's Ishin and he's getting a title match and it's happening at Korakuen and it's perfect and it makes absolute sense. Ishin just feels like someone who is at the time where the title picture is so developed where, you know, as much as Kai and Ishin were getting pushed and were getting those wins, because like, there was nothing really to come out of a not hug and Kai Ishin title match. Like, unless you're going to strap up Ishin, there was nothing to really accomplish with that. He was not going to figure into the Triangle Gate, I think, where much more close getting a dark masquerade than anything. So what can you do? What's the next step forward for the guy? He gets his first title match. It will be in his hometown. It would not be at his home venue because that's why we were in Yokohama. But essentially, he's getting this title match in his hometown on his anniversary is when you look through the career of Ishin, September rings strong for the guy. That is the month of the year. September is Ishin's month.
That's a great point. No, I mean, he's been protected. So this isn't one of those things where it didn't feel like, we were going to shrug our shoulders and go, oh, I guess Ishin's challenging for the belt now. No, if you go back over the last 2 or 3 months, Ishin's been very protected and Ishin's been very good. And we've all in the Discord been like, oh man, like, I kind of hope they do something with Ishin, and they're doing something with Ishin. So it's not only an exciting match on paper, it not only makes sense from the historical standpoint of what his career has been, which Dragon Gate is so good at doing, but it feels like finger on the pulse booking. Like, this is, you know, the logical next step for this guy. And it's a match that I can't wait to see. I think it's going to be a huge test for Ishin, but if he wrestles like he has been, he's going to be up for it.
And I think that this is like such kind of a unique scenario where Ishin, he's not like a Yoshida Cyber Kong guy, but he is a big guy. And that is not a kind of title match that you see very often. And in particular, you get someone like a Big Boss Shimizu, who is just like, he's a thrower. Like he's a big guy in track. Like, he's built that way. Now we're getting the sumo match. And I think that that is something that we haven't had in a long time. And it's very interesting. And seeing how Yamato kind of accounts for that is going to be thrilling.
Well, like we said, after Yamato won the belt, you know, the last Dreamgate match he had in Korakuen was 2017 against BB Hulk. So a lifetime ago, you know, a different promotion ago, BB Hulk's body was in an entirely different state than it is now. I mean, that was 7 years ago, and Yamato's had, you know, a ton of Dreamgate matches since. So this one is going to feel special. I hope they pack in 1500. I hope the building is hot beyond belief, because this, to me, and I don't know where you feel, but this feels like a really big match. You know, it's in the right building, it's in the right setting, but like I said, it feels very finger on the pulse. Like, this is the next natural step. And if we're going to do an Ishin challenge, like I said earlier, all right, Jason Lee, you know, you're next up on the small show defense. And I don't know if that means Gate of Origin. I don't know if, you know, if Yamato's holding the belt by March, God, you would really hope they do Yamato and Jason at Champion Gate. That feels like a Champion Gate Dreamgate defense. But, we'll see. I guess let me throw this at you, because, you know, the schedule is so odd in September, where I assumed at Dangerous Gate they would announce King of Gate. We would do King of Gate starting at the September Korakuen, and then we would have like a big Yamato match, maybe a King of Gate match at Gate of Origin, which is kind of a hometown show for him. And then Ishin came out, and so there were 24 hours between the angle and the announcement of the match. And once again, I was wrong in the same way that I thought Kai would wrestle Yamato at Dangerous Gate, because it was Kai's hometown. I thought, oh, well, they'll do a big Yamato Dreamgate match at Gate of Origin. Ishin feels like the right opponent for that show. They'll just do that there. But now we have a Korakuen show on the 5th and then Gate of Origin on the 16th. And I have no idea what they're going to do at Gate of Origin.
Could they do Rhea Fuda gets a Brave Gate challenge and headline with that?
Not as a headliner, I don't think. I mean, I guess that was the plan last year, but Fuda had,
it's a
like,
holiday too.
It's a holiday, and you know, Fuda going into Origin last year just got his first win, and they were doing something with him that had been built up over at least a few weeks at that point. And I mean, could they do Daya and Fuda? Yeah. Could they headline with Daya and Fuda? No, absolutely not.
I don't know. With how they did such a big step back and they were doing the parking garage last year, it doesn't. I don't think Gate of Origin is going to be that high ranking. And I don't think it's I don't think it's outside the realm of opportunity.
But they're in the, I think they're back in the regular.
Are they actually in the
year.
Building?
Let me see. Because
it just says Sunfesta. It doesn't
yeah,
say.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Plenty of tickets available. I'll say that. Not that any show in Japan has a Dynamite Advance, but
I know one show that doesn't have a Dynamite Advance as well.
Which one's that?
Oh, I mean, coming up on the 21st, the Glate house show in Korakuen Hall.
Man, that show. Let me. I know.
Because Shima like straight up posted the ticket chart, and everything was triangle other than their fan club.
Oh, I didn't even see that. See, let me pull up that card real quick, just because I've got to stare at it. I've got to figure out what the hell they're doing. So that is on 8/21. It's T-Hawk and Irie versus El Bendito and Imperado Azteca. That could be a 2¾ star match or a 4¼ star match, and with no middle ground whatsoever. That's the Nakajima versus Ito Lindemann and Azuka stupid match. And then they're doing some sort of mini tag tournament. And then Tamura versus Kawakami. I always play this game with every Glade show. If I lived in the area, would I go to this show?
I don't think I would.
If I lived in the area, I would not go to this show.
So I'm looking at least this was last week. So I'll be charitable about this. So you know how it basically goes. Circle means tickets are greatly available. Triangle means very few. X means sellout.
Yeah.
So they have triangles for front row, circles all across for floor seating, and every other section has circles other than the 4,000, 3,000 yen general attendance that are all triangles.
Yeah, I don't know about this that one. That is a bad show.
I don't know. I mean, they completely devalue the product by having it all available for free on YouTube, and then no one wants to buy a ticket.
Well, and it's a bad card. You know,
it's a bad card.
I understand what they're doing, but I don't want to go see that.
I mean, we'll see Nakajima fail at being a draw once again.
Yeah, that one sucks. The 1-on-3 match, that can kick rocks. I can't believe
if he's not getting a Tamura match, then why are they bringing him in?
I know. I can't believe they're booking Nakajima and Lindemann together, and it's not good. That takes special talent.
I just think like it's just like, at what point does everyone else go like, all right, this is just not a real company, and go elsewhere?
Where are they going to go?
Yeah, that's the thing.
That's, I guess,
Vamostar.
There is Vamostar. You know, that's the interesting thing with All Japan kind of having an identity and a core group and momentum is, if I'm All Japan, do I want ice cold Hayato Tamura? You know, if I'm All Japan, I've said, hey, Kaito Ishida, we're good, actually. We're going to use Naruki Doi instead. You know, like, who are the guys and where are they going to go? I think they exist on this island for a reason.
Yeah, yeah. And I just, like, it is one of those, like, fatalist things that it's just like, oh, there is no going back, so you're just kind of fated to watch like the dwindling like this. Like, at what number do you think that they decide, all right, this is embarrassing, like we can't do this, like 600
in terms of like canceling the Korakuen show?
I mean, reevaluating what you're doing as a promotion.
Oh yeah, I mean,
we would have done it years ago, but
I would have just done everything differently. This is not a bad roster. There's no reason these shows should be as bad as they are. But no, I mean, this is a 700 person Korakuen show at most.
Yeah, I just like, at what point, other than it's very clear that Suzuki wants to be a part of the act now. Like, we were trying to figure out, why do you keep this promotion around? But thank you, Kazuhiko Nakajima. You've made it abundantly clear that this guy is just as much of a mark as like the old All Japan owner, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but let's talk about happier Dragon System stuff, Case. Let's talk about the Triangle Gate match. Natural Vibes versus Big Hug. Natural Vibes retains the belt. Strong Machine J with the machine suplex on Kamei. I thought this absolutely ruled. This was my favorite thing on.
It's fantastic. You know, this is, and I said this in my review, but for all of the athleticism that we see, and, you know, I think, you know, the point I made in my review was, we're now a generation removed from a generation stealing from Dragon Gate, which means you're not getting the watered down version, you're getting the watered down version of the watered down version. And so it might lead to, you know, wrestling as a whole getting, you know, a lot of trios matches and a lot of guys that could do big moves and cool dives and things like that. But it's still not the real thing. And this match and the Brave Gate match to me were so exciting because they felt so different from the rest of the wrestling world. And this one was, you know, for as good as some guys are out there, there was still only one Dragon Gate trio style. And it is this. And this was, to me, sort of a perfect match for what it was. You know, I had a tad below the Dreamgate match. I thought the Dreamgate match was objectively better, but these guys, I mean, these guys are all so dialed in right now, Mike. Like,
UT
I think
right now
UT
is on another level,
crushing. And I think at this point in time, all six of these guys are doing the best work of their career. And so to have a match like this, it was great. I think there's, you know, in a different setting or with a deeper story with more hate and more heat, you know, you can hit a higher ceiling. But this was the best version of this match possible because all of these guys are doing the best work of their careers right now.
And I think really we got to see what Chapter 4 of Natural Vibes is going to be. What is Strong Machine J's Natural Vibes? And he is kind of like the mad conductor. Like, he is the one that you got like a stretch in this match that a lot of it was UT interacting with Hyo, but you see like SMJ like getting ready at always like for the next step and keeping it flowing and keeping this like moving. And then afterwards, he gets the pin. It is the best looking machine suplex I think he's done his entire career. And then he immediately just starts celebrating because he won in his hometown. He starts pointing to the ring and all of that. And I immediately look like an idiot saying that he should never win his hometown. Like, it felt like a moment. And that's not to say, like, Big Hug as a trio, I they need to run this back because I think we're now getting to see the three guys work together and show the chemistry that they weren't really able to do when you had Monte and Hyo as singles champions. I mean, if only for like the Samson driver into the German suplex, I thought that rocked. And I want to see a lot more of this Big Hug team. I thought that this was just gorgeous Dragon Gate Trios wrestling.
The thing that I like right now with Dragon Gate is if they wanted to do this, it would take a concerted effort. It would take a real specific energy to do this. But you have shows that can be defined and built on Yamato Dreamgate defenses. And you also have shows that Doi's schedule permitting can be booked and drawn around a not hug Twin Gate defense. And we're getting to this point with Natural Vibes. You know, I talked about before Kobe World, I said Shun and Jason should win the Twin Gate belts. They should go on a really dominant reign. And then that didn't happen. And then before this show, I said Big Hug should win the Triangle Gates and they should go on a really dominant reign. And that didn't happen. And even though Vibes, all told, has only had three successful defenses, one of which was not televised, the strength of the Gold Class match and now the strength of this match and their strength in terms of their chemistry as a trio, I feel like we're in the midst now of the thing that I was asking for. Just it was with the team that I wasn't expecting. But this now feels like a dominant trio's reign. And if you wanted to, you could build and draw shows around this title reign as well. This is, again, a very bold claim, much like in the way that I compared Yamato to Okada and Tanahashi. By no means is this on this level, but it does remind me a little bit of 2005, where you had a Mochizuki Dreamgate defense that felt like its own thing, and you had this Triangle Gate scene with Blood Generation and Dewfixer that was its own thing. And then by the end of the year, the Brave Gate belt was established to where that had its own vibe and that had its own thing. And all of those title reigns were super distinct and super unique. And they all had some level of power within the promotion. And I think if Dragon Gate just puts their head down and goes straight ahead with these champions, say through Final Gate, I think that feeling can come back because I think they're on the verge of something really special with all of their champions, Daya included. I just don't look at that Brave Gate run as being as special as the other three titles right now.
And I think some of that is just the fact that he's been playing mascot for the company too.
That's true.
And I mean, sometimes that happens for guys. I mean, like, Yamato essentially was doing that all last year, being the mascot. So it's nice seeing someone else into that role, but I think you're right in that it kind of restricts it in a way.
Let me tell you the spot I enjoyed most in this match. I think it's worth bringing up. The UT Hikari no Wa on Hyo that Hyo rolled out of and hit a double stomp on that immediately led to the Jackie knife. That is one of the best sequences I've seen from Dragon Gate this year. That was fantastic.
You know what makes that sequence so great? Because I have that as one of my bullet points here. It is the fact that when you watch great Dragon Gate wrestling, and when they are in the full flow of it, and what is either called like the sprint or the flow part of the match, you get to see like these parts where like you tease between the Hikari and Owa, and you get the thought in your mind of like, oh, there might be a moment where Hyo can counter this, and then he immediately counters it, and it's like, oh, that's leaving UT just right open. There's Jack right there, and then you get the Jackie knife right there, and that is one of the most rewarding things in pro wrestling that Dragon Gate uniquely gets to offer, especially for people that end up like dipping in and dipping out. Like sometimes you lose a little bit of the continuity, but when you get to see these matches where you're just going like, okay, I know that Hyo now at this point, I think we could say like, what is like the key points of his offense? It is he will do the double stomp out of nowhere. And now you get to anticipate that. And the way they work it into the match is just like, again, telling stories throughout the match through the wrestling.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is, again, that's, you know, to repeat the first point I made on this match, it's the kind of thing that separates this match from all of the other hyper athletic, fast paced wrestling we get now. There is just a level of crispness and a level of timing and a level of creativity with this that I don't feel like anybody's on their level. And it's specifically these guys. I mean, I want to table the Twin Gate match for a second, because I think
fair.
We can.
That's
I think
fair. Because we can blow through that. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I want to talk about the Gold Class in Zebrat's situation, because I'm torn, because there's a part of me that thinks that Yamato versus Minoru might be coming, but it's not coming anytime soon, and that they're setting up Shun and Jason and Minoru to win these Triangle Gate belts, which makes all the sense in the world. It'd be a super hot match. It'd be a super big match. But I'm now of the belief, despite advocating for Vibes to lose at Kobe World and then advocating for Vibes to lose here, that, that Vibes should hold the belts for forever now.
Yeah, I just kind of want to see them cook. Like I've been wanting to see what this new generation Natural Vibes is going to be, and now we have it. And maybe now it's not that we had it, it's just now just hitting us over the head of we are just the trio's match masters at this point, and I don't want them to go away.
Well,
and that's the problem about Dark Masquerade being in the offering, is that like we've called for this for what, 6 months now? It's like since Jason turned, we're like, what does this mean? Like others are coming back now, and that means we have to betray this idea we've had.
I'm trying to think of the last time in Dragon Gate, and I would love for people, if they have thoughts on this, to put them in the Discord. The last time in Dragon Gate that all four champions felt like this strong of champions. Like, I don't want anybody to lose their title right now. I'm enthralled with this Dreamgate run. I love what the Twin Gate guys are doing. I never want Natural Vibes to lose a match again. And Daya is having the type of Brave Gate reign, at least so far through one defense in the title one, obviously, that he should be having. This is as satisfying of a title picture as they've had in years. And my fear is that Dragon Gate moves so fast and they turn over champions so quickly that all of these guys could lose their belt soon and all of these title runs will feel like unfleshed out. These all feel like long-term reigns right now, and I know that's historically never what Dragon Gate has done, but I want these guys to explore the space. I want these guys to take all the time they need. All four champions feel like they could have really long title runs and it would be okay with everybody.
Yeah, and I think that it is something that's put into doubt, because if we want to talk about the all-out war here, Zebrats or whatever the heel unit is going to be is now instantly, if not the most powerful unit in the company, they might not have the belts to back it up. They have some now serious firepower after the all-out war, as it comes down to Minorita as Mini Skywalker with the cookie sheet. He turns on Zebrats. He attacks them with the cookie sheet. He unmasks, revealing that it was Takumi Hayakawa Minorita the entire time as Mini Skywalker. This lets Kota Minoura hit the Golden Rose on Jason Lee, winning the match, winning back Minorita. But then immediately afterwards, Minoura clocks Rita with the baking sheet, says he is joining Zebrats instead because the Gold Class failed to get him to the top, and it did not seem like that this was a big Shun Skywalker plan. This is Kota Minoru being a grown-ass man making decisions all of his own.
Loved every second of this. I thought the match was great. I want to talk about Mochizuki Jr. later, but obviously we have to talk about this angle. I thought it was super, super creative in the way that it played out, with Mini Skywalker looking like he was going to attack Minoru, opting not to attack Minoru, and then at the very end, getting his shit rocked by Minoru. You could make the argument that, hey, it's silly Coach Minoru spent the entire match beating up Z-Brats only to join them at the end. It's a wrestling quirk. I'm not saying I like it. I like especially in Dragon Gate when they avoid these types of things and do turns at the start of matches rather than the end of them. But on the whole, I found the match itself minus the angle to be a really entertaining match. And then I thought the angle, if it wasn't a home run, it was definitely a triple. I thought it was a really, really strong angle.
Yeah, because we come out of this now and we have heel Kota Minoru. The big change has happened. He is now a member of Z-Brats. And Minorita has announced that he is no longer going to be called Minorita. He's not Mini Skywalker, evidently. Not going back to Kumi Hayakawa. Instead, realizing that everyone has called him this from the start, Minorita is now Rita with three eyes. The three eyes because it's Dragon Gate and they have to do things this way.
Of course, because they have to make my life harder.
Right, yeah, but he's his own man. You notice he was growing the beard a little bit under that mask. Maybe we're going to get to see the new look for Rita coming right out of it. But I think we come out of this and we are trying to figure out how things go. Like, is it going to be both Mino and Rita? Is it going to be one? Is it going to be the other? We kind of result in a, I would not say like the obvious answer, just because we had that Rita swerve and it's going to have now what is gold class now without Kota Minoru. But I do feel like that this is maybe not as interesting as having a heel Rita, but I think that this was the right move for Kota Minoru at the very least, and the right move for Rita being able to just be himself and not being pigeonholed as a mascot.
Let's talk about Minoru. I think this is the most pivotal point of his career, even more so than the Coach Minoru debacle of 2022. I asked you over the weekend, or I guess after the show, so earlier this week, I said, is Minoru the first rookie to debut on the Dragon Gate network? And unless I'm mixing up OG Shiba's start date, then yes, Minoru would be the first guy that we've seen everything of in real time as soon as it's happened. Like, yes, you know, I've seen everything of Hyo and Shun and Ben and the 2016 guys and so on and so forth. But the network brought on the Kyoto shows and the Fukuoka double shots and more footage than ever before. So I've seen literally everything Minoru has ever done. And I always mention the fact that he debuted in July of 2018. And by August of 2018, this guy had gear. By November, he was in Mochizuki Dojo. The expectation for him has always been so high. And it's why when he failed 2 years ago, it was so devastating and it was so noticeable. Because I don't know if anybody in Dragon Gate history has ever fallen on their face quite like that. And it happened with a guy that was supposed to be better than that. And the interesting thing is that in Mochizuki Dojo, he had all these expectations. And in Team Dragon Gate, he became kind of a runaway success story. And it led to expectations in Masquerade. And then he got his own unit. And with that came its own set of expectations. And that has been a moving goalpost for 2 years now of what the hell are we supposed to think of gold class and what are we supposed to get out of this unit. And it feels like with this turn, and maybe this is just me editorializing and romanticizing to some degree, but it feels like the last bit of weight that was on Minoru's shoulders that has been there since his debut because he was so highly thought of, it feels like that's gone now. This is the most drastic change of his career. It's his first out-and-out heel turn. And if they present him in a similar way to that they've done with Jason Lee, where, you know, for 7 years we knew who Jason Lee was. We knew the character and we knew the gear and we knew the moves, and it was all, you know, very, very well done, but it was, you know, a guy that we had gotten all too comfortable with. If they can do the same thing to Minoru, then we will have to reevaluate his expectation. But that might be the greatest thing for him. We might finally have a clear path to Menorah success. The problem is that it goes back to expectations. If he doesn't land with this gimmick, then maybe it's just not meant to be. So I say all of that to say maybe weight's been taken off of his shoulder, but you know what? It's Coach Menorah, and there's still now more and more pressure to succeed.
Yeah, and a lot of that is now the fact that we look at the past so often, Case, and we have seen enough people due to either booking, due to their own ability, due to personality, or due to just the crowd deciding, no, we don't like you, fall flat when given this opportunity. And this feels like, and it's remarkable to say this about someone who's only 25. Like, we spent the time lionizing Ryohei Oiwa, and he's still technically on excursion and not getting a push in this home company. We have seen so much of Kota Minoru. We've seen main events of the biggest shows in the company. We've seen tournament wins, and we've seen just him constantly be offered, and it's just not happening. And at a certain point, you just have to move on. And I wonder, and it's ridiculous, and I know that it kind of goes back on the idea that I'm firmly of the belief that this Yamato reign is solidifying the next generation. But at what point does the audience basically just say, you know what, we've seen what all you've tried to do with this guy, we're done? Like, that's where I feel like when you say, like, this is like the weight is still on him. Like, if anything, like the everything that around Gold Class and what happened with him in Gold Class, that's behind him. But now this is like the clear shot for him.
That's exactly it. The weight is off of him that was there. He's got an open path to the end zone right now. And now if he doesn't score, now we're all going to tug our collars and go, oh, I guess he's not the guy. Let's say this Menorah heel run doesn't work, and maybe he beats Yamato for the belt eventually, and then the reign just kind of falls flat. Is his historical comp at that point Ryo Saito?
I mean, the situation also with Saito was that he already had such an injury history too, mm-hmm. that like, well, while that all was happening in 2005 and 2006, this was a guy that, I mean, missed his debut date and later on would have some really serious injuries that would have curtailed a main event push to begin with. So there is that there that I feel like you look at Saito was the one that they kind of decided, all right, this is, we're going full bore with him, and then they kind of took the football away from him as soon as he got there. But I feel like he has a lot more advantageous case than Sai Ryo.
Yeah. I mean, his ceiling should ultimately be higher than Saito's. You know,
his ceiling is what they wanted T-Hawk to be.
That's true. And maybe at the end of the day, the comp is just a slightly less annoying T-Hawk.
Or, like, you know, a T-Hawk that it seems like actually has a fan base.
That's true. I'm really curious to see what they do. I'm really excited to get to this weekend shows in Fukuoka and to see the presentation. Because again, you know, we've seen this guy's entire career, and it's not even like there was a drastic jump from young boy Menorah to his first gimmick. You know, he in such a chaotic time where, you know, he was coming in on the same show that Hiroshi Yamato and Kai debuted, and Shingo was on his way out, and the OWE split had just happened. And it was like they snapped their fingers, and Coach Menorah was a guy on the roster and a guy, you know, in the thick of things. And so he's never really had a moment to more or less act out. And this is the time that we'll see. You know, he's in the main event on that first show. It's him and Shun and Kai against Hulk and Ben and Junior, which is fantastic. And then on that second show, it is him and Jason against Ben and Rita. Those are two, you know, banger matches for a Fukuoka card. I am really excited to see what they do there.
Right. And I just, like, you talk about, like, the presentation. Is it wrong that my antenna has been so up that we should be having some sort of a change in what Zebratz is? Because it felt very much like you had Shun and Jason in their purple dark masquerade gear off to one side. You had still a bald Kota Minora in the middle, and then you had Ishin and Kai on the other side. And it felt like it was like, oh, you kind of have two camps here in this unit. And I don't know. I'm really intrigued to see how it kind of comes off and what it plays out, because I come away from it, I'm just like going, I don't think we're done yet with Z-Brats, like with the shakeups and all of that.
Well, you know, as Jay has pointed out before, and I've mentioned on here, and I'm sure you've said it as well, you know, Z-Brats is technically Kai's unit. And so we've all kind of waited for Shun to make the executive decision that, you know, Z-Brats is not mine. I need something fully in my image. I get the impression that if there's more changes on the way, Ishin's a heel. Ishin is going to be a heel for a long time. I think he will go with them.
He's got some runway left.
Yeah, he's got the hair. He's got the facial hair. He's got the gut. He's a heel, and he's going to be a heel for a very long time. Kai is ready for a babyface turn. Put Kai in Paradox. Let's rip the Band-Aid off. Let's do it. Let's just get it over with. So I could totally buy there are more changes on the way. Do they need, you know, if it's going to be Shun and Ishin and Kota and Jason, they need at least one more guy.
They need a fall post, yeah.
And I don't know who that would be. I wish it would be so much fun if it was Astraea, just for the sake of it being Astraea. I don't know what else they'd do, but they would need somebody else.
Right, and I would think that you would look and wonder about, like, okay, Kato has notably, when Shun has been doing stuff, making fun of the roster, he's include Kato in that.
Yes,
so
Kato's on his way back soon-ish.
So there might be a chance that Kato turns face because he's listed as a noob on Shun's Photoshop.
Oh, interesting. So that's a mistake, just because Kato,
he's a natural heel. Yeah,
he's a natural heel. And right when he got hurt is when he was starting to figure out that act, you know, in the same way that it took Ishin a long time to figure out what that character was. And he finally got there. Kato, it took him a while. He got there quicker than Ishin did. And then he got hurt. And that's a real bummer.
Yeah, I hope that was just Shun just doing a thing.
And yeah, because you get like Shun and Kato were supposed to be together in Rey de Parejas this year,
right? Yeah,
which is crazy because, you know, Ishin just not being in that tournament just now feels so odd. But yeah, no, I would hope Kato sticks around. So maybe that's it. But then you still need a lost post, and I don't think it should be Ishin, and you know it definitely shouldn't be Jason, and it's not going to be Kato or Shun or Minora. So yeah, you need one more if you're going to make that change.
Sahara.
Yeah, maybe. Again, Astraea, just for the sake of Shun just recruiting another guy, Astraea as a heel on a heel turn that would get no reaction, nobody would care, it would feel kind of goofy, but once we got through the initial angle, I think that'd be so much fun.
And as soon as Est is heading out, you turn him immediately, and then it's like, look at this fucker Shun. He just immediately took out Astraea, and then Astraea can go, you know, wrestle in
Orlando.
Yeah. So I mean, like, it doesn't have to be a long term thing. It's just, it can be a short term heel turn, and then he gets absolutely chumped out. I mean, that's basically what happens to Punch Tominaga every single time.
That's right. It feels like something's coming. Motsuki Jr.
He's great.
He's so great. I started thinking about, you know, 20 years ago, it was Shingo and Suwama and Shiozaki, and I guess Goto would have been the fourth guy in that mix. And I think we're at a point now, and I got to do some writing on this. I need the time where it's Anzai and it's Oiwa and it's Junior. And I think these could start to be the generational defining guys. And that's, you know, a very lofty expectation for you know, for Oiwa. I really wish he was going to define Noah's generation and not New Japan's generation, because I think he'd be so much more interesting full-time in Noah. I started thinking, like, Noah should just buy his contract out.
I don't know if I was New Japan, I would entertain the offer. I think he's that much of a blue chipper. You need him, or you don't want to give him up.
Here's the thing. New Japan shouldn't entertain the offer, but Noah should empty the bank.
I mean, like, at least offer some of the depth of field cameras that they use.
That's true. That'd be a fair trade, actually. So
they're expensive cameras, to be fair.
You know, I think we're hitting this point in Japanese wrestling where again, maybe it's just coming off of a, you know, a kind of fun G1 and what's been a fun N1. And, you know, Dragon Gate's been awesome this year, which might sound silly on this podcast, but I don't know if it's been said outright enough that this promotion has had a really, really good year and is set to have an incredible last quarter. There's something happening here. And, you know, it's important to me that we look to the future and we figure out who the next flag bearers are. And I think we have something with Anzai and Oiwa and Junior here in the same way that we knew Suwama was going to be a guy and we knew Shingo was going to be a guy and we knew Shiozaki was going to be a guy. I think we have that in this generation. Three guys that debuted all around the same time that for their respective promotions, I think have a very similar ceiling and all are prodigies. And that needs to be monitored and we should be looking at those guys as some sort of collective going forward.
Yeah, I mean, Anzai just breaks my brain. Whereas with Junior, I'm like, no, he is all of what we expected him to be. He is kind of the prince that was promised. And Oiwa just, he just jumps off the screen. What do you feel about, we didn't talk about this. What do you feel about his look? I think they need to send him away before he comes back and give him and refresh him because the mullet is just too like 1980s fullback to me.
Oh, no, that doesn't bother me. The problem is that if they send him away, it kind of goes back to the goofiness I was talking about earlier. I don't trust him to go away and then come back and not look like an idiot when he comes back.
That's fair.
The mullet is at least in the spirit of what wrestling is, you know?
Yeah, whereas it took me a long time to finally get Olka Sasaki, and I really like Olka Sasaki now.
Yes, man, are we in the same boat on that one.
Yeah, just like the first few times, like, what is this guy's deal? And now I was like,
this guy must suck. And then I was like, no, he's actually really good.
And you're like, oh, sleeper hold, sick. All right, five mile. Let's go.
All right, let's go back to that Twin Gate match now.
All right, so speaking of failed flag bearers, Kirishio, Tokyo, Japan, makes his Dragon Gate debut, teaming with his Wrestle 1 trainer, Shuji Kondo, against the reigning 66th Open the Twin Gate champions. They are members of Paradox. They are not Hug, Dragon Kid, and Naruki Doi. They pin Kirishio with the Doi Bowl in 8 minutes and 40 seconds. It was a lot of Jiro bullshit.
It wasn't any good. It wasn't offensive. It was
over.
Yeah, it was a check-in-the-box Twin Gate title defense for not Hug. It's not what I would have wanted. Kondo and Awashi would have been 10 times more interesting than Kondo and Jiro, but we got through it.
Absolutely. Open the Brave Gate title match. Dragon Daya versus Pro Wrestling Noah's Junta Miyawaki. Daya wins with the DDT after 10 minutes and 6 seconds. I read your review before I watched this match, and I stopped after that. Boy, Junta Miyawaki showing like old Minoru Tanaka energy, right? You wrote that in an interview that he kind of reminds you of like a previous generation's junior. Like, I don't know what it is that I've been thinking about like the late 90s, early 2000s junior heavyweights lately, but it really like jumped off the screen and connected with me in the way you wrote that.
Well, I think you've been thinking about it because that style doesn't exist anymore. And, you know, because I've been watching a ton of wrestling lately and, you know, checking in on some promotions that I've fallen behind on. And it's a busy season in Mexico and in Japan and, you know, to some degree in the US right now. So I'm up on a lot of stuff. And
I mean, Triple Mania Mexico City is on Friday, that dude, you know, like we got to be all
that's
up
funny.
On it.
I didn't even realize that. And I know, I know Cubs wrote a preview, but I assume
that's
for some
how
reason
I know.
It was just later. I will read the Cubs preview when we're done. Then. I'm a little concerned about worldwide the homogenous style that we're seeing right now. And it really jumped out to me, one, when Kevin Sullivan passed, and I've never thought anything of Kevin Sullivan as a wrestler, but I started, you know,
time and place guy. He's a guy in his time and place.
In a vibes guy to some degree. And,
oh, absolutely so. Yeah, time and place guy, vibes guy.
I'm, you know, going through YouTube, I'm watching 6-minute Kevin Sullivan matches, and I'm getting completely sucked into them because they're so different than, you know, anything else that's out there right now. And then somebody in the Discord, on the Voice of Wrestling Discord, posted an old, I've seen it before, but it's like Bockwinkel and Stevens against Red Bastine and somebody else. And it's like 70s AWA studio wrestling. And it's Bockwinkel, so it's fucking awesome. And, you know, it's a 70s AWA match. Even if it's a high spot match for AWA standards, it's still 70s AWA. And it made me smile from ear to ear. It was so different than anything that exists now. And for as much as I enjoyed the high points of the G1, and for as much as I've enjoyed the N1, I started getting bummed out because I was like, oh man, like everybody's kind of wrestling the same style now. And it's why, like, I'm way more patient with Oleg Bolton than maybe I should be, because at least he's doing something different. And I just want guys to do something different.
And he has a vibe that is really cool. You want him to succeed. We want Boris to succeed.
And Junta does not have a vibe that's very cool, but Junta worked a match that was quite honestly cool as shit. He went in there and he decimated Dragon Daya's arm in the same way that a Minoru Tanaka would or that a Koji Kanemoto would, and he wasn't on their level, and he never will be, but that's okay. Because what he did was interesting, and it was different. And the combination of that, and then, you know, we'll keep talking about the guy. He's the main character of this week. But, you know, the combination of this match and the Kiyomiya and Oiwa match, it was like, okay, all right. People can still do different things in wrestling. Like, things are going to be okay in a weird way. And I never, ever thought I would say this. Junta Miyawaki inspired a lot of hope in me this week.
No, I kind of see that. And it was also one of those things where, at least for me, I feel like sometimes I'm a little bit more vibes based than you are, or at least kind of like letting it soak in. And the idea that you had like two very similar physically looking guys with like both of them dyed their hair pink, one of them, and the fact that like Junta Miyawaki, and I'm just gonna be blunt here, Case, kind of looks like shit in a way. it's a shitty look. It is very much like, man, you got to touch up that dye job, your gear, okay. But like, you have like that versus the guy who's like all pristine and is like, oh, he's the star here. And then he just tries to dismantle him. It's a compelling story that I feel like works even if you're just parachuting in.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. You know, it was not as good as the Gold Class Zebrats match. It was not as good as the Twin Gate, or I'm sorry, the Triangle Gate match. It was not as good as the Dream Gate match. But man, This is a match worth watching because it really stood out from the pack.
The Kimura work too? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, this was something different as we're getting hit over the head right now with great matches from Japan, which is not a complaint because it's honestly a welcome change in 2024. But this one was way different than anything else that I've seen recently.
Yeah, no. And it was really kind of like an interesting kind of place. Something I wanted to kind of pull up like in... It really more applied during the All Out War, but Jay did also really well with this here. Jay, like, getting over the storylines, like talking about like the Shun Skywalker mask and all of that stuff, and then talking about like, oh, the relationship that Junta Miyawaki had with like the Tori Mankasa thing, while very deftly avoiding talking about Espy and Taku there. I thought that added a lot to the sequence of matches on the show. I wanted to point that out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Undercard, going back, we had the Paradox team of Susumu Yokosuka and Kagetora. That's Yokosuka Ichome, the original Jimmys, going up against Yazushi Kanda and La Estrella. It was some really good Susumu and Estrella magic happening here. Kagetora getting the win over Estrella with the Guramakakari.
It was a match. It was a match. Estrella is a very fun undercard wrestler.
Yeah, yeah. It did. You had a little bit of him like trying to like bow up to Susumu. That was fun.
It was.
Before that, we had Kung Fu Masters Hoho Loon, Hori, and Reach Tominaga versus Masaki Mochizuki, Don Fuji, and Toru Owashi. This was a Kung Fu Masters comedy match with Owashi getting the win with a choke slam on a punch Tominaga.
It was the best punch slingshot they've ever done.
That was really good. And I liked like Ginky, the way he was incorporating like who he is as a wrestler with the gimmick. It worked pretty well. Like, mm-hmm. as much as this gimmick goes, you know what I mean? They overachieved with Jason and Jack. Opener, KZ versus Ryoya Tanaka. KZ got the win with KZ time, which must be like the first time on TV that he's won with that. He'll win it with it on house shows, but he never wins it in a recorded match.
This was the best Tanaka performance I've ever seen.
Elevate him. Elevate him and give him a better flash pin than the Total World small package.
Maybe he's the one that turns heel.
I think, you know, I mean, he's been pushed so much as like the white bread babyface that it could work if it's him.
He's like really good. And unfortunately, Junior steals all of his thunder. But mm-hmm. man, like, people realize Tanaka's going to be like a massive star, right? Does everybody get that? Because I feel like sometimes people don't get that he's handsome and muscular and can do acrobatic stuff and is just a foundationally exceptional wrestler given his experience level. Like, he's going to be a huge star.
And the company like figured it out immediately. It was like, we need to... They've done everything they could to make this guy really get it. And yeah, you wanted him to do his heel turn early so you can get his babyface turn back as soon as possible, right?
Yep, absolutely.
So yeah, maybe he is that fall post. But then I feel bad because he's like so much better than like that position. Like honestly, maybe Dark Energy Daiki needs to be out there with that.
I would do that in a heartbeat. I think that is... I mean, could you imagine some Shun and Daiki tag team matches? That's the move. I just don't think they're going to do it.
Would Daiki have such a disregard for his own health and safety that he'd be willing to just be an absolute battering ram?
Of course.
Like, that's why I'm imagining, like, the most cruel form of the Roderick Strong Jack Evans tag team.
that's a great pull. You're exactly right. Yeah. Let's quickly, because I got to run here in just a second, but let's go over these Fukuoka cards real quick.
So Fukuoka, we have the double shot coming up this weekend, the 17th. An interesting kind of, actually, it's the 18th. Interesting weekend going up. They also will be in Genki Horiguchi's hometown of Kunamoto. But the only stuff making the network up until next week will be this Fukuoka show. These cards, I'm going to run through them real quick.
Okay, yeah, so go daytime and then I'll respond, and then go nighttime and then we'll close things out.
Absolutely. So we are at the, as my card is not pulling up there. There we go. Daytime. We open up with a unaffiliated tag team match. We have Genki Horiguchi, Yasushi Kanda, and Toru Washi versus Ultimate Dragon, who was not on this week's shows, Madoka Kakuta and Dragon Daya. So kind of a little bit of decourage going there. Special singles match, Rita versus Ishin, Mochi Fuji versus Hyo and Jack Kamei, Yamato versus Jason Lee, SMJ, KZ, Big Boss Shimizu, and UT versus Dragon Kid, Naruki Doi, Susumu Yokosuka, and Kagetora. And then the main event for the afternoon portion, we have Benkei, BB Hulk and Mochizuki Jr. versus Shun Skywalker, Kota Minora, and Kai.
You have to assume that either Rita versus Ishin or Yamato versus Jason will end in some sort of DQ, but even with that in mind, this is as strong of a Fukuoka card on paper in the Akros Fukuoka Erica that this is as strong of a card that I can remember in this building.
I would say that they've had title matches that I would feel like that kind of changes the stakes of that. But for a daytime show, because usually the daytime show is woof.
Yeah,
this is a absolutely like sparkling daytime show.
I'm into everything on that show.
Yeah. I mean, even getting Ultimo back will be nice.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, Case, did a bit of math. Ultimo is like the closest like major star that has like the longest career since Ogawa retired.
We're going to circle back to that on a later episode because I found that topic to be fascinating.
Yeah, I ended up like, I don't know. I went really crazy about that. Let's talk about the evening show, though. We have the opener, D-Courage, Madoka Kakuta, Dragon Daya, Ryoya Tanaka versus Natural Vibes, Strong Machine J, Big Boss Shimizu, and UT. Hey, that's the Triangle Gate champion team all in one. KZ versus Genki Horiguchi as your singles match. Misaki Mochizuki, Don Fuji, Toru Owashi, the Grumpy Bastards versus Ultimo Dragon, BB Hulk, and Mochizuki Jr. That's a weird trio. Benkei and Rita versus Mino and Jason Lee. Hyo and Jackie Kamei versus Not Hug. Hey, that's the Twin Gate champions. And then Yamato, Susumu Yokosuka, and Kagetora versus Shun, Skywalker, Kai, and Ishin, a Dreamgate preview as your main event.
You would have to think the betting lines are minus 1,000 on Ishin pinning Kagetora in that main event.
Yeah, they're not even going to take bets on that one, bud.
Yeah, absolutely. Match 5 looks awesome. This is not as good as the daytime show, but still a fun-looking card.
I'm really into the Benkei and Rita tag team reuniting.
Against Kota Minoru and Jason reuniting.
Yeah, that is a beefy match for me. That is my match of the day. I'm really into that. And I don't know why Ultimo, BB Hulk, and Mochizuki Jr. crack me up as a trio, but like,
well, yeah, what do they talk about? You know, what are they talking about right before they walk through the curtain?
Yeah, I don't feel like Hulk and Jr. have a lot in common to begin with. So you add Ultimo to the mix, and Junior's probably wondering, like, why this guy made me Junior and not let me be my own name, you know?
Absolutely.
And that is the weekend's televised shows happening in Dragon Gate. Again, they'll be in Kunamoto and Nagasaki closing out this stretch. We will be back next week, and we'll be having a rewind and rewatch. It's August. We'll leave that one as an open question. We'll talk about this Fukuoka showcase. Then we have to preview the Gate of Miyane. That's coming up real soon.
It is. That card looks awesome, and I was told that ticket sales for that have been very, very strong so far. So more on that next week.
Absolutely. Anything else you want to touch on before we're out of here?
Nope, I'm good.
All right. You can follow us on Twitter at OpenVoiceGate. Case is at _inyourcase. I'm at Fujiheya. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you next week with Rewind and Rewatch. Have a good rest of your week, everyone. Take care.
Do you like wrestling trivia? Then check out the 5-Star Match Game, the Pro Wrestling Quiz Show. I'm Joe Gagne, and every episode, I grill 3 contestants with 5 rounds of power-packed wrestling trivia. We have over 30 evergreen episodes in the archives covering WWE, AEW, Japan, Mexico, and much, 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 much more. Play along at home and check it out today.